From Hospice UK and Dying Matters, this is the Dying Matters podcast. I'm your host, Eleanor McConnell. Hello and welcome to episode 2 of this season of the Dying Matters podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. We have had a great week here at Hospice UK. Lots of us were out and about at just a few of the over 400 events that were held for our awareness week, and there were some great conversations happening on social media. We also published the results of a survey we ran that asked people what they would focus on doing if they found out that they only had 12 months left to live. Over 50% said that they would focus on getting the practical stuff sorted out, you know, wills, financial issues and all that fun stuff, which wasn't a surprise to us, because we know it weighs heavily on a lot of people's minds, even if they can't quite bring themselves to focus on it yet. Nearly as many people said that they'd focus on their bucket lists, taking trips or having experiences that they'd always wanted to tick off. And then about a third said that they'd spend the time revisiting the people or places that they cared about or hadn't seen in a long time. It's great to ask yourself that kind of question and work out what's truly important to you so that you can be as prepared as you can be for whatever might come your way. However, we all know that death is not always so kind, and sometimes it comes for us without warning, whether we're ready or not. And this is what happened to Gary Andrews, my guest this week. Gary is an animator and illustrator whose life took a massively unexpected turn when his wife Joy died suddenly when he was away on a business trip. I talked to Gary about his experience of grief, and in particular how he and his kids have been using Gary's drawings to process such a brutally sudden experience of death. Just a note that we had some recording issues with this one, which is why my voice is lower quality this episode, but Gary sounds beautiful, and it's him you want to listen to anyway, and thankfully, he does most of the talking. I started by asking him why he said yes to an invitation to talk on a podcast about death, of all things.
Because 18 months ago, where are we now? 18 months ago, 2 days ago at time of recording, I lost my wife. She was 41. I was away on business, and she's never ill. And we FaceTimed, and she said she felt a bit flu-y. And 2 days later, I got a phone call from her sister saying, "Can you come home early from your business trip? Because she's had to go into hospital, it doesn't look very good." And by the time I got home, she was dead, and it was sepsis. And you know, suddenly I was confronted with something I was never expecting to be confronted with, you know, losing my wife. I was 15 years older than her, so we always imagined, you know, the odds were in the favour that she was the one that was going to live and I was the one that was going to go. So suddenly I found myself a widower at 50, whatever I was at the point, 56, with 7 and 10-year-old children, with no warning, no prep, nothing. And yeah, so ever since then I've sort of made it my mission to sort of talk about grief and talk about the processes, because I've had quite a sort of strong positive reaction to the process. I've not sort of I'm lucky that I'm not a depressive person in real life. I've never had depression. I consider myself incredibly lucky about that. I'm a glass half full kind of person. So I took this thing and I've turned it around, hopefully, and people have been very nice about the way we've done things. So I'm happy to talk about this sort of thing because, you know, apparently it helps people. So, and it helps me too. It helps me if I know other people are getting something, it helps me as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe why did it become your mission in such a big way? I mean, most people treat grief very privately.
They do. Well, the way I was coping with it, because of what I do is sort of public anyway. You know, I as a director, as a storyteller, if you like, I'm used to sort of getting ideas and information over. Also, the hobby and how I met my wife Joy was through theatre, through acting, so I'm quite used to putting it out there. Okay. And one of the things I was doing, which I'd been doing for about a year and a half before she died, was doing these nightly doodles about my life, just sort of generally if something had happened that amused me or made me think about something, I would do these little sketches like a diary, but with a doodle, with a little cartoon. And I've been doing it for about a year and a half. And then when she died, I kept doing them. And obviously they became about grief and about single parenthood and all that kind of thing. But for me, they were a process of looking at my day, analysing what I'd been through, and just getting it out there, releasing those little bits of thought so that I wasn't sort of stewing on stuff if it felt, you know, sad or negative, or if something amused me, I wanted people to know that there was, you know, that it was, there was still laughter and smiles to be had, you know, despite this sort of tragedy. And mainly I was doing it for my friends. My friends used to follow me on Twitter and Facebook and stuff. And then it got noticed and picked up, and suddenly it went nuts, went absolutely crazy. And I started noticing very quickly that people were responding in a really positive way to it, saying thank you for putting this out here. It makes me know I'm not alone, or it makes me understand my feelings, or it makes... And it was kind of, it was a bit of an eye-opener to me that I had a way of expressing these feelings that I'm very lucky I have, that not a lot of people do. And so obviously the decision, I said, well, I wasn't going to stop drawing anyway, but it became something bigger than that. And although I don't think about the audience, I still think about my day and my life. And that's what people respond to, is the personal side of it, the closeness of it, I think. So I realized that it was helping everybody else. And I thought, well, we've had this terrible thing happen. Now, we lost Joy at this ridiculously young age, and it's stupid and pointless. If I can help other people, it makes it that bit less pointless. Yeah. And for me, that's so important, that it feels like now she has a legacy beyond just the fact that we all love her and miss her, and our own personal legacy in our life. There's this bigger legacy beyond that now of you know, the fact that she's died, the fact that I'm doing this because she's died, is helping other people. It is a legacy, and I find that incredibly comforting.
And yet it seems to me there is something about the particular medium that gets people, like, that helps people really relate to it, I suppose.
Yeah. Yes, I think it's very immediate. You get an image, and they're very simple. They're not complicated drawings. They're very simple. They're only very quick drawings that I do last thing at night before I go to bed. So then they're nothing over elaborate, and they're combined with a little simple phrase or just something to put it into context. And I think because it is that visual immediate medium, people can respond on a kind of visceral level very, very quickly to it. They don't have to read and interpret. They can just see a thing and go, oh, yeah, that's me. Oh, that happened to us. That I recognise that in my life. Or as I'm further down the line now, people who have come, who are newer into this journey, look at it and go, they take comfort from the fact that down the line they'll get to the point I'm at now or whatever, you know. Oh, it's only 5 months for me, I still feel really raw, but I can see, you know, now you're at 18 months and you feel this. Hopefully I've got that to come, although everyone's journey is different and everyone's timing is different. I think there is this immediacy to it that I think people respond to.
So there was this great reaction online, but I mean, did it also help you in your relationships with other people, like friends and family, and to process that whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, just being able to get stuff down on paper, you know, people, you know, my friends or whatever would see a particular doodle or whatever and would sort of message me and say, oh, I saw so-and-so, are you feeling okay? You know, because I had one where I was a bit down or whatever. You all right? Do you want any company? Oh, I saw that one. That's great. Oh, yeah, we were feeling like that. And so... In this incredibly, increasingly busy world that we all live in, you know, there is this community, you know, that most of the people who, you know, I know them, they are friends, but there is now, obviously I have this massively wider community, which I still think of as a community. I have people all over the world who chat to me on Twitter and stuff, and they feel really invested in the story. But yeah, it really helps me, because it means talking about it is an important thing. And some people go into counselling to talk about it. Some people have a family, a wider family they can talk about. I have, my parents died 30 years ago. I don't have a lot of very close family that I see on a regular basis that I talk to. I mean, I have some lovely cousins who live nearby who have been amazing, but they're not, I don't see them on a daily, weekly basis like a lot of people do. I have my friends from the theatre where we met who I see fairly regularly, but this world we live in and the age that we are, with the children's ages that we are, means that we don't spend all the time in each other's pockets like we used to when we were younger. And it's a way of still communicating with them. It's a way of having a conversation and talking. So I feel like I am talking to people about it regularly. And the more you talk about it, the more it takes the sting out of it, the more it demystifies the whole process every time you talk to somebody, you discover something new by what's coming out of your own mouth. You suddenly go, oh, I think that. You know, I mean, I've done quite a lot of the, you know, podcast interviews now, and people say, don't you find it difficult because you're talking about the same thing over and over? But each person you speak to has a different angle they want to talk to you on. And each time you speak about it, you do uncover. It's like being an archaeologist and chipping away and uncovering a little bit more each time. And so I find that incredibly helpful for me.
Do you think it would have been harder to talk to people without the drawings as that kind of prompt?
Probably. I don't know, because that's who I am and that's what I do. Yeah. So I would have to try and imagine how it would be to be somebody else. Maybe. I don't know. It is a great... It would certainly be harder to talk to the wider group of people that I talk to. I mean, my friends that I do see physically and talk to, we were able to talk about stuff right from the beginning. And I made a very conscious decision very early on to talk about it. I remember going back to when my parents died, you know, I found that talking about it when they died, you know, helped. So when this happened, unexpected as it was, I had that memory of what it was like before. And just sort of applied that, but even more so. And I suppose because as well, my friend circle are mostly, you know, theatrical or whatever. We're used to talk about emotions and stuff a bit more. Maybe we're not that reserved.
Yeah.
So people were open to talking about things that some people might find uncomfortable. And I know certainly that when friends of mine who perhaps are not from that circle, you know, would speak to me, I could sense a kind of self-consciousness in people. Oh, can we talk about, you know, what is there to say, you know? Yeah. And I would encourage them to talk, because the thing that I realised from talking to my friends as well, which you don't think of first of all, is they'd lost her as well. It's not just me and the kids that lost Joy. We all lost her. Yeah. And it was the effect it had on them. And you think, if we can all talk about this, it's gonna help. And, you know, it did. So, but yes, I think maybe it would have been more difficult. But that's one of the things I like, why I talk to people, is because I want to encourage people to talk. You know, I think it is so important to have this dialogue.
Yeah.
And it's one of these, you know, one of the last taboos, isn't it, is that people don't like to talk about it. And yet it's this one inevitability.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, we hear about the taboo a lot at Dying Matters, and how uncomfortable people feel and how they don't feel like they had people to talk about it. But honestly, with all the stories I've heard, you sound like you have one of the most positive relationships with grief.
Mm.
I've heard about. And I don't know if you can sort of pin down how you can got there, because for a lot of people it is such a struggle. You hear all the time how lonely grief is.
I can't deny the loneliness. Yeah. I mean, even now, I do, if I look deep inside, I'm lonely. I miss her. I miss her every minute of every day. But I can't do anything about that. She's gone, and there is no way around that. Therefore, you can either look back and go, oh, she's gone, I'm missing all the things. Or you can say, right, the way to honour her existence and to honour the relationship we had is to be positive and move forward and remember with love what you had, and then be grateful for what you had. Because, you know, I had 19 years with the most wonderful woman I ever met in my life. And how can I... Yes, I can be pissed off that that's gone. But, you know, that's understandable. But the gratitude for me is this thing. And I've got these two fantastic children. And, you know, everything about my life, the way it is because of us. You know, that changed the course of my life. So I have this gratitude for that. Yes, there's this anger at the universe for taking her away from me. But there is this incredible legacy of love and kindness and good things that are happening, and helping other people by doing, talking about stuff. And I've been invited to do a couple of talks in various places and things, and people have found them comforting. So, I mean, you have to go, you know what? There are good things happening that wouldn't have happened if she'd died.
Yeah.
Therefore, you have to take those and go, well,
that must be quite a painful thing to sort of say.
Sometimes it is. You just think, you know, I would give anything to have her back and for none of this to be happening.
Yeah.
But I can't. And that's the secret. I'm realistic about the fact I can't undo it. I think a lot of people get stuck in the kind of, oh, if only they hadn't. Oh, I wish they hadn't. And it's like, well, we all do, but they have gone.
Yeah.
Therefore, you owe it to yourself and to their memory to make the most of what you've got now, surely. Otherwise, can you honestly think that the person who's gone would be sitting there going, no, I want you to be miserable. I want you to sit there doing nothing. If you really think they would think that, then there was something seriously wrong in the first place. They would want you to be positive, to remember them with love and happiness and kindness, and to make the most of what you've got, because this isn't a dress rehearsal. We have one crack at this, and you make the most of every moment. And that's the way I kind of feel about it. I like to talk about it to people. Yeah, if people can see there's been some kind of positivity in the way I've got it, hopefully they might grab a little bit of that when it's their turn or whatever. They can say, oh, how, what did you do again? How did you do that? And I don't know. To me, it was just an instinctive reaction. There was no major conscious decision of, right, I'm going to do it this way because that's the way and it'll make me look fab. I just felt I owed it to me. I owed it to the kids. I didn't want the kids to see me sort of, you know, being negative. I allow them to see me cry, and that's an important thing. And I said to them right at the beginning, you know, you don't ever be scared to say to me anything. If you're feeling, you know, something, tell me. I'm going to be doing it to you as well. Be prepared. You're going to see Daddy sitting there crying sometimes. You know, and they were amazing. If they did see that, I'd just get the hug and they'd wait till it would gone. Yeah, and then they'd tell me what they were after or whatever. And yes, they have been able to speak to me and open up to me when they've needed to. So I just felt positivity was the only possible solution, really.
Yeah. Do your kids like the drawings?
Yes. Yeah, they always liked them before anyway, and they're a massive part, yeah, of my life. They're my absolute reason for living, really, you know. And and they're very funny and they're very sweet and they're great kids. And yeah, they used to sort of look at them anyway, but most days it's be like, oh, what was last night's drawing, Dad? You know, and my daughter especially, who's that tiny bit older, she's 11 and a half now, quite often I will find her having got one of the sketchbooks off the shelf and be flicking through the old drawings and stuff. She loves looking back at the stuff that's happened over the last 18 months and even some of the stuff before, but certainly the stuff that's happened since Joy died. And she looks back at them and remembers stuff, and they like that, yeah. And they sometimes something will happen in the day, they go, that's your drawing, isn't it, Dad? You know, and I go, listen, don't play to the audience. Don't think I'm going to do stuff just because you do it, you know. But yeah, so it's kind of part of their life as well now, really.
Yeah.
If something happens that's a bit, I don't know, what's that? I can't think of the right word I'm looking for. I sometimes ask their permission if it's something that I think might make them slightly embarrassed. I mean, yeah. They love all the funny stuff. If it's an emotional one, I will sort of say, is it all right? I want to do that one, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, social media in kids' lives is a bit of a minefield.
It is anyway. So I do sort of just check that it's okay.
Yeah.
And they're fine with it, you know, because I think that's just, they're used to it and they see it. And it's not like I'm putting their photo and address out there, you know, it's a drawing of them after all. Although people do, sometimes you meet us, go, oh, I recognise you from the drawings, and you go, oh, God. But yeah.
Yeah. So one of the questions we're asking, because every year we run a campaign around awareness around death and dying. And the question we're asking this year is, are we ready to sort of, as a society, to really talk about death, support each other through grief, deal with all the things we need to deal with before we die, the practical things.
Hmm.
I mean, do you have a sense of whether or not as a society we all need to get better at this, given that your experience is so positive?
I guess as a society we probably do. Certainly from my experience of it, it's made it a lot easier to cope with, because in my circle I've managed to be positive and proactive and understand it. But I do sense in a wider thing, you know, people do still find it difficult, although I have noticed, but again, is it just because I'm going through it? But I do notice that in recently there seems to be a bit more of a dialogue happening. Now, I don't know if that's just the situation is like, you know, when you buy a red car, suddenly you see lots of red cars.
Yeah.
Because I'm in the club, I'm seeing and hearing it a lot more. maybe that's a truth. It's hard to tell, to be objective about that. But I do get a sense that it's out there a bit from just things you see on the media. But I think the more open we can be, the easier it's going to be for people to cope with. And it's about talking about it before it happens to you. It's about being ready for it. It's about preparing for it. We were lucky. We'd prepared in practical terms quite a lot because I was that much older. So, and we had the children and we thought, you know what, we'd better make sure everything's in place because the likelihood is, you know, and then it happened the other way around. But luckily we'd covered ourselves both ways. But what it meant was there was an awareness of that part of the process of life.
Yeah.
In, you know, and it's, and you know, it's a couple of conversations that you might find slightly difficult, and then once the things are signed, you put it in the filing cabinet and you can forget about it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I think you have to face the fact it's going to happen. Therefore, well, you know, you don't buy a car and not have insurance, even if you're not, you know, you're not planning to have an accident, but you might, and you've got your insurance in place, and then when they have the car accident, you're covered. Okay, it's the same thing but the only difference is you are going to have this car accident. You are going to die. You know, one of you is going to go first. Therefore, in practical terms, get this sort of stuff set up. Talk about what's, you know, the kids. Talk about, you know, who looks after what, whatever. I mean, since Joy died, obviously, I've revisited the will and I've sorted out everything that happens when I go. So that for my peace of mind, because that was my biggest fear after she died. For me, it was like, oh, God, what happens if I suddenly go? That is the thing that I find the most worrying. I'm not scared of death for myself because, you know, I don't know what happened before I was born. So why should I, who cares? It doesn't matter. It's nothing I can do about it. Therefore, you might as well just enjoy now rather than worrying about what's going to come later. So, but I was concerned for them. Obviously. So I've got all that in place and now I can relax about that. And in fact, even my daughter said to me a few months ago, she had one of her nights where she came down with some tears. And I said, what's the matter, darling? She goes, I'm just worried about what happens if you go, what happens to us? And I could say to her, don't worry, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, rather than
blah, blah, blah.
Worry, it won't happen.
And she was like, okay. She knew that in practical terms, they wouldn't suddenly be out on the street having to fend for themselves like wild dogs. You know what I mean? That she knew that they'd be looked after.
Yeah.
I mean, and by whom, you know?
She's worried about that.
Well, absolutely. This thing got taken away from them at such a young age. Suddenly their life got turned upside down. Although kids are incredible and they live in the present in such a beautiful way. That it was, you could learn a lot from watching their reaction to it, this visceral reaction to the loss and the grief, and then their practical reaction to getting through day by day. And you go, wow, okay, there is a lot to learn from that living in the now. And not, you know, children don't hark back with nostalgia a lot. Mm. They will look back at, oh, you know, we liked that. But they don't do the, oh, if only she'd lived, then we'd be doing this now thing or whatever. They live now. They might say, oh, mummy would have enjoyed this. And that's the really healthy thing with my two. We talk about her a lot. And we were doing a thing yesterday. We did a sort of a muddy run thing. We did one of these sort of, we're just running through the mud and slushing that. And it was like, oh, mummy would have loved this. You know, she'd have been laughing all the way around and go, yeah, she would have, you know. And we can talk about her in that way. And I encourage that with them, to still talk about her like that, but not talk about her as if she's in the next room or as if she, but to say, yeah, she's gone. Mummy would have loved this when mummy was alive, you know. And so we keep her in our lives and our thoughts, but acknowledging the fact that she's not there, you know. And I think that's helped them as well.
Yeah. And I don't know, feel free to not talk about this as if it's your kids, but I mean, has there been much support for them in their grief, do you think?
They've been offered all the support I wanted.
Yeah, okay.
The school were fantastic. There was all the opportunity, if I wanted, for them to have counselling, to go to support groups, to do whatever. I spoke to them about it as well, how they would feel, and they were happy just for us to chat. Because we were open about it from day one, and we didn't hide anything from each other, I feel like we've been our own counsellors in a way. And in a funny enough way, even the doodling has helped because they see how I'm coping with that and on a sort of more, on a deeper level or whatever. And they also, they have talked to their friends about things. And then we have a couple of friends who I've met through the whole process who are also in a similar boat who have children, and they've been able to spend time with them or whatever and just unload a little bit. So they've been able to talk to peers and to me and stuff, and haven't had the need as yet for any kind of official support. But it was all offered and it was all there if they wanted it. We've just made personally the choice not to. I have nothing against it, and I know a lot of people who use it, and I think it's brilliant. And in fact, I'm involved with like Winston's Wish and people like that who do this extraordinary job, and Marie Curie. And so I'm involved with quite a few charities who do all that. I've just personally, in our lives, we haven't done it.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you a kind of hard question, possibly.
Go for it.
But if you had to bring it, if your job was to bring about a cultural change where everyone feels as comfortable and supported in talking about death and grieving as we currently do, what would be like the top three things that you think would sort of need to change? Because I think you've identified a few already. But
I may well have done, but I think the difficulty when I start thinking about this stuff is because I'm just sort of doing it instinctively.
Yeah.
I don't know what those things necessarily. I mean, one is obviously talking. And talking about it with your friends and encouraging your friends and family to talk. One of the things for me, and this is a small thing, it's probably not what you're talking about, but for me it was an important thing, was using the death word, not using euphemisms for someone dying. When I told my children that Joy had died, that was the I said, doctors tried to do blah, 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 but mummy died. Didn't say she passed away, didn't say she'd gone to, you know, all that, all the euphemisms that people use to soften the blow.
Yeah.
I sort of consciously, sort of instinctively just said, died. So, and the first thing they did was repeat it. She died. So the first thing they said was use the death word. And then you've already got past that first hurdle. Some people find it hard to say the word.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that sort of thing is important. That demystifying, I think, is important. By being open and confronting it. So, yeah, I think that's... I don't know. I mean, what... Okay, I'll throw it back at you. You think I'd identified some stuff. What was it you've heard me say that makes you think that? And then I maybe can respond.
Yeah, I picked up on that sort of emotional openness. So a willingness to let your kids see you cry,
right?
A willingness to, all you're already sort of talking to your friends and being quite open, yeah, about this kind of thing. I mean, I feel like maybe British people, and particularly British men,
yes,
really struggle,
yes, with, I've had, yeah, this a lot with people, yeah, which is I think why a lot of people actually have been very kind and encouraging about me, because, you know, I look typically like the sort of person that wouldn't be, you know, middle-aged, beardy bloke. You know, you're not really the kind of guy that's going to be, you know, open about emotions. But obviously, I'm this sort of arty-farty actor type chappy, and I do. But yes, I think that is really important, being open with your emotions, being allowed to say. One of the things we did, Joy died on the early hours of the Friday morning, and I let people know by Friday afternoon. I was letting people, the close people, well, I didn't find out till lunchtime, because that's when I got home from the trip. And in the afternoon, I was letting people know what had happened. And one of the people I spoke to was the chairman of our little theatre, you know, so let him know. And he said to me, how would you feel about throwing the bar open tomorrow night, so if anyone wants to get together and just sort of be together, because we're all in a bit of shock about this.
Nice.
And I said, yeah, that'd be great. So it's like 24 hours after she died, where we were, you know, our place that we met, where we had our circle of friends, we threw the bar open so that, you know, a handful of us could get together and go, what happened? And about 200 people passed through in the whole evening. Oh, it was extraordinary. I put on my little Facebook feed, we're doing this if you want to come along, for the people that weren't part of that, like the mums from the school and other friends or whatever. And people came from miles, and we all came together in this place and talked about her. And there were pictures up on the, they had a TV screen with some pictures of her playing and stuff like that. They'd thrown together really quickly. And we could instantly, we could say, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
This is crazy. Oh my God, we miss her so much already. But also remember straight away some of the great things and the good things. And there was actually a lot of laughter that night, as well as a lot of tears.
Yeah.
And immediately we demystified and sort of taken the sting away from it. And that was extremely important, I found, that getting together early to sort of just talk it through, rather than kind of everyone sort of keeping their distance until you're ready.
Oh, until the funeral, that week, like 2 to 3 weeks.
We just got together,
yeah,
and went, shit, yeah, this has happened. And I think that really, really helped. Really helped. And I know I'm eternally grateful to my friend for thinking of doing it. I mean, obviously you're in the middle of it. You don't think of saying, oh, my wife's just died, let's have a party. Yeah. You know, you don't think of that. But actually, that's kind of what we did.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. It was so emotional. It's the one thing I talk about it sometimes. I still get quite emotional talking about it. I mean, you know, okay, this is not in everybody's relationship, in everybody's life. But, you know, because we were theatre types and there was a lot of people there, there was at one point when I got up and just thanked everybody for being there. And I just asked if we could give her one last round of applause sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it was deafening. I mean, it was an incredible thing. And it was really positive, you know. And I'm sure if people live in different circles, they could find an equivalent of in their life of what they do for that. Mm-hmm. To find a way to honour and celebrate that person, even when you've just lost them. And that was the thing we did. We celebrated her life straight away, rather than going, oh no, she got... It was like, wow, we had her. That's amazing. Let's cheer that, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that was incredibly positive and pushed us all forward in a different direction than we would have been if we'd all sat at home going, oh my God, what's just happened?
Yeah. So it's about getting together with your people.
I think getting together with your peers, the other people whose lives are touched by it, and actually all acknowledging what's happened, I think that's important. I mean, I think the Irish thing, isn't it, is to have the wake very quick and all that sort of thing. And a lot of cultures do this thing where very quickly everyone gets together. And I think that's the other thing, choice of the process after dying as well is interesting, because there are so many different... People assume they've died, they get taken away, you go to the undertaker, you do the thing, you go to the crematorium, you have the little thing go through the curtains, yeah, and that's it, and you're all sad in a church.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to do that. We didn't do any of that. You know, there was a cremation, but it was completely private. No one was there. And what we had was a ceremony in the woods, and we celebrated her life, and we had sung a song, and we just said thank you for being with us and go off on your journey, and had this amazing, beautiful experience. And that was what we did. And so many people said, didn't realize you could do this. You can do what you want.
Yeah,
you know, it's just this acceptance over the few, you know, since Victorian times, really, of this is what you do. But if you look back before that, there's a million alternatives, and there are now, in the same ways you can get married in lots of different ways, you can deal with the afterwards in a lot of different ways as well. You know, dying is can be as varied as being married now, you know. And I think it's nice to look at those options as well. You know, that's another thing to look at when you're thinking about death and dying. Don't just assume that you're going to go to the local undertaker with the black car and the big hat and do that, because we had this lovely company who did a green funeral, basically. And we had a cardboard coffin, you know, which it was recycled material in the first place, because basically we were recycling her,
yeah,
you know. And it was like, well, it felt right. The life that we lived, that felt the right thing to do. Some people might want a high mass and a big expensive thing. They can have that. Or you can do what we did, you know, and everything in between. You can be planted with a tree seed. You can do everything. I mean, we did a thing with the ashes. We planted a tree afterwards with some of our ashes and stuff like that. And so there's a million things you can do. And I love the fact that we do that, that something is growing from that, you know. And that's something else I've found quite useful. We don't go to a sterile cemetery with rows and rows of stones, which again is a very outdated, in a way of responding to things.
Yeah.
We don't do that. We go to a beautiful park where there's this beautiful new tree that is growing, and it's being fed by her.
Yeah.
And so again, that was another positivity that we've done. One of the things we've been doing on birthdays and Mother's Day and things like that is we visit the tree. And just this year, just went, we thought, well, rather than doing cards, we got some nice big leaves out of a bush in our garden, and my children wrote on them with a white pen their messages to her, and we just put them at the base of the tree. So they've given her the message, and now those leaves will just rot into the ground and feed the growth again. And things like that we've found really useful. Nobody knows better than you what you want.
Yeah.
You know, you may be wrong, but you'll find that out. And it's, you should let the people... You should let people respond in the way they need to respond, because if they want to do that, because it's because they need to do that. isn't it?
But it, yeah, you know. And it's all, but it's also difficult to find. I think a lot of people, when they're in that state of mind, the last thing they want to do is like Google and do a price comparison.
Which is why it's probably a good idea to think about that beforehand. Now, that's what I was saying. That thing about preparation. If we could acknowledge that that's going to be happening. If you've done a pre-plan and looked around and go, wouldn't that be a nice way of doing things? All you got to do is, you know, get their business card or bookmark them on your computer or whatever and have it in your file. When this happens, this needs to happen. And then the right phone calls will be made. And, you know, in my will now, it's got the numbers of all the people that need to be called to make sure that I end up in a cardboard box having the same thing happening with a tree planted next to her. Because I won't be there to oversee that. But I know, hopefully... Not that it matters because I won't be there, but I know technically that that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, and my kids who've seen that happen with mum will see the same process with dad and know that that's what we wanted, you know. And I think it's the planning. And now I've done that, I don't have to think about it anymore. I don't have to think about it because it's going to be sorted. And it's the same if there's two of you still together, have that conversation, talk about it together. Yes, it's going to be difficult maybe because you don't like to talk about the end. But, you know, do have that one difficult night, make those plans, do the thing, and then have a nice drink and forget about it and watch a silly movie, you know? You've had the conversation.
Yeah, treat yourself.
Yeah, and then treat yourself to a takeaway and a bottle of wine and something stupid on the telly, you know, because you've done it. So, yeah, I think that is important, definitely. So dialogue is probably the most important thing when you said about the things. Talk, talk, talk.
Lucky for us, talking is what we're all about. I'm really grateful to Gary for doing some of that talking with us. It was thoroughly enjoyable, and you should definitely check out his Doodle a Day series on Twitter and Instagram. They're very beautiful drawings of everyday life that have really struck a chord with people. You may well have seen them featured on the likes of BBC News before now. You can find him online at Gary Scribbler. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back with another episode next week.